The following is an unrehearsed interview with Mrs. W. E. Johns and Mrs. Harder Rains by Debbie Wilson for the Kentucky Oral History Commission. The interview was conducted at the home of Mrs. W. E. Johns on June the 26, 1978 at 10 o'clock a.m. First of all, ladies, I want to get some background information. Now, I understand that you're sisters. So we'll start with you, Mrs. Johns. Tell me now, where were you born?
I was born in Townsville, Tennessee.
Cleburne County.
Cleburne County.
Okay, what year was that?
It's in 1895.
Okay, how about you, Mrs. Rains? Were you born in the same place?
I was born in Cleburne County, Tennessee, Townsville. September the 15th. 1897.
Okay, now, who are you married to, Mrs. Rains?
James G. Rains. He's deceased.
What about you, Mrs. Johns? Who's your husband?
William Edward Johns.
Okay, now, did you ladies get your education here in Middlesboro, or did you get it in Tennessee?
We got it here. We were too little to get it in Tennessee when we moved here.
Okay. What about children? Do you both have children?
I have three children, Mrs. Edwin Fletcher and Mrs. Albert Earl and Ben Johns of Newport Richey, Florida.
Now, what about you, Mrs. Rains?
Well, I have three children living. I lost my oldest son in 71. It's Mrs. Jake Souders, Cherokee Boulevard in Middlesboro, and Mrs. Ray Phillips next door here, and James Paul, Reverend James Paul Rains of Mulberry, Tennessee, in Hancock County.
What was your occupation, Mrs. Rains?
Pardon?
Your occupation? Have you always been a housewife?
No, I've been a sales lady and collector and so forth. I had the Alabama Novelty Store for a while, and mostly a housewife, of course.
Well, what about you, Mrs. Johns?
Well, I worked 7 years in the Bluebell Overall Factory here. And that's about the limit of my working on that housewife at home. I sold for about 50 years. Dressmaking.
Okay, ladies, we're going to now talk about early Middlesboro. I understand that you came here in the very early 1900s.
Well,
just describe to me what it was like when you came.
Well, it's just almost like out in the country. Mud roads, no sidewalks. Right where our house is now was woods and cornfields, and it was it just wasn't much town. There was two department stores, I believe, is all there was in Middlesboro at that time, and one of them was Weinstein's, and one was Euster and Ginsburg and Goodfriend all together right where Sturch's is now.
You have anything you'd like to add to the early Middlesboro description, Mrs. Rain?
Well, I believe that she gives nothing for mud because we'd have to walk on rail fences to get to town and then we'd go, you know.
Well, where did y'all go to school here?
Well, there was a school building right where the parking lot is now, across the street from where Dr. Pusin is. You know where his office is. Well, across the street by that parking lot, there was a school building. They just had the one big building, and that's where we went to school. High school and everything was in the one building.
Did you have to walk to school?
Oh, yes, we walked to school, and for several years we lived up next to the tunnel. Way up, it was a commissary house when they built the tunnel, and we lived up there, and we walked from there to the school.
Now, where is the tunnel? I'm not familiar.
Well, it's about a mile and a half up. You go through the tunnel in the Cumberland Gap. It's a tunnel through the mountain where the trains went. And it's a mile and a half up here at the foot of the mountain.
Well, now, What else do you remember about your early education? What was it like to go to school in the early 1900s?
Well, they had several grades in one room, of course, and it was altogether different from what it is now. And they didn't teach too many things, reading and arithmetic and spelling. And I was an expert speller. I'm not now, but I was then.
Now, like today, the children have lunch in the cafeteria. Did you have a place to eat, or did you have to take your own lunch?
Well, we had to take our own lunch.
What kind of things did you take for lunch in
well,
early 1900?
Honey, we never seen a loaf of bread. We took biscuits. My daddy was a farmer, and we always had plenty of ham and everything like that. And we just took ham and biscuit and
boy,
maybe jelly or something.
Sweet potatoes.
Sweet potatoes. Yeah, sometimes sweet potatoes. That's right.
You didn't have any potato chips.
No, we didn't. We'd never saw any potato chips.
Well, what about discipline in the early schools? Were they strict on you?
Yeah, they was pretty strict on us, but I was pretty mean, and I never did get a whipping, but I needed them. There was a big boy, he's 16 years old, when we were little in the third grade, and he'd missed out something anyway, he'd sit right in front of me in school. And he turned around and blowed his breath in my face one day, and he'd been drinking whiskey. I smelled it. And I got up and folded my seat up and took my wooden pencil box and busted it all to pieces over his head. I thought sure I was going to get a whipping, but I didn't.
Did he get a whipping for coming to school drinking?
No, he was sent home.
Oh.
He was sent home, and I don't know whether he got a whipping or not. He was sent to the professor and from there home that day.
Well, now, what about your teachers? Did they were they just qualified to teach every subject?
Yes. The ones that taught, one would teach from the second, third, and fourth grades, and another in fourth, fifth, and sixth grade, like that. And the primer in the first and the second grade together.
They know about as much then as a 7 or 8 year old child does now.
No, they know more than that.
Some of them did.
They had a pretty good education, but they could teach the low grades after they finished the eighth grade.
Yeah.
When they had the eighth grade education, they was allowed to teach first, second, and primer, like that.
You mean once they could teach it, like as soon as they got out of the eighth grade?
Yes, uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Didn't that make awfully young teachers?
Well, yeah, they were kind of young, but they could teach the lower grades. Beulah Flowers lives right now. She still works for the, she was Beulah Lehman, and when she graduated from high school, she taught school over on Dark Ridge. Now, that's about 2 or 3 miles here, and it's over in the park now. You go up the foot of the mountain and go left way back in the mountains there, and she taught school there for several years, but she'd go on to school. You see, they had colleges and more schools then, and she'd go between schools and then she'd teach. So she teaches now. She's I'm not sure what she is now. She don't teach a place, but the underprivileged goes to her for her to get shoes and things for them.
Mm-hmm.
She's a social worker in the school now.
Is there anything else that you all can remember about your education here?
Well, I don't think of any right now. There may be some more, but I don't think.
Can you
right
think
now
of anything, Mrs. Raines, that you'd like to add about going to school here in the early days?
No, I can't think of anything to add to that.
Well, how many schools were there in Middlesboro?
Well, there was just the one. But there was a county school up towards the lake that the people lived outside the city limit had to send their children to that.
That was over at Fern Lake.
Yeah, but the first school we went to here, this old church out here in the East End, they had a school there, and we went to a pay school there. It wasn't the schoolhouse, it was a church house. and they,
Mr. and Mrs. Smith and his wife
would teach a summer school 3 months there, and we went to school there one term. We were just little, and I guess in the second grade when we went there.
This was a mining town.
That was a...
mining town. Mines all around.
Okay, so this was a mining town. Now, how did that affect your life?
When we were children, we didn't know a thing about the mines there. We had to get grown and know people that worked there before we ever knew it was a mining town.
Well, you mentioned the mud around here. Now, when did they get the first roads and sidewalks in Middlesboro?
They had sidewalks as far as Tumbling Hotel. That was 18th Street quite a while before they had them on anywhere else toward East End or West End or anywhere. From about
1911, they had the sidewalks up. Because Marcy Ball, I stayed with her while Charlie was at Hot Springs.
What about the early roads? Paved roads.
Well, now, I don't remember. I guess they graveled them and fixed them at the time they did the sidewalks. But we didn't have them like we've got now, I don't guess, till maybe 30 years ago, 35.
Something like that. That was in the 20s when Jim rode that bicycle and the roads was so bad up Cumberland Avenue. That was in the 20s, wasn't it?
I guess it was. You know, that's one thing I've never tried to keep up with, what your things happened. You know, nobody ought to, but I never did.
I'd say from 18th Street on, Cumberland Avenue was real bad. There's chug holes and everything in it, and my husband had the bicycle with the wheels that high, and he rode it back and forth to work. And everyone laughed at him for passing the cars up. You know, they would be stuck in the mud. He'd just pass them all up on that big old bicycle. Come on in.
Well, you mentioned cars. When did the first cars come into Middlesboro?
Well, they started about 1912, 1913, didn't they?
Yeah, the first one was about 1911 when we lived on that house. And then by 1912, there were some taxis here.
That was the Rose.
When I got married in 1913.
Sam Rose brought that first car that run around over town. He was from Tassville, Tennessee.
And the first thing that I remember was the Marcy brothers, and one of them sure now runs a taxi, the young one, but the two older ones, they're both dead. And they run taxis when we lived in the mining camp. They'd haul us to the...
Well, that Arthur is
the junction.
Speed's boy. Yeah. Arthur is. He's not a brother to him.
Well, what about the first airplane? Do you remember seeing the? Do you remember the first airplane that you ever saw?
Yeah, I do, and it was years ago. I don't know just what year it was, but they come one year to the fire ground, and all they had the fire, you know, and we said, a few hundred people up there, about the biggest crowd I ever seen at that time. And that little airplane, it wasn't very big, and he'd go up and circle around and come back. And you could take a ride for $3.
Did you ride that plane?
No, I didn't. I was afraid of it.
Madge did.
My youngest sister.
And pulled her hair, and she thought her hair was hung in something.
What do you remember about the first plane? Did you?
Oh.
I mean, was it a shock to you? Or?
No, it wasn't a shock. We knew that there was planes, but the first one, I can't say it was a shock. We had a helicopter. There's a politician that did his campaigning in the helicopter, and it would come and light right here at 10th Street, you know, coming down.
Yeah, but that was years after the first airplane.
Oh, yes. That was just a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned Mrs. Johns that you lived in the mining camp. Mm-hmm. Now, was your husband a miner?
Yes, he was. He worked in the mines over 25 years. He was a miner. He worked in and around the mines. The most of the time, he handled the railroad cars. He had a big stick that he put in that wheel, the brake on it, and he run them down under in the field full of coal. He run them on down on the switch with the train to pick up.
Well, now, what was it like? I don't understand. Now, where was the mining camp first?
Fork Ridge, Tennessee was one, and Edgewood was one. Both, it's a fork from the junction here, about 3 or 4, maybe 7 miles at the farthest to each one of them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's real close to Middlesboro.
Well, what was life in the mining camp like?
Well, it was good. It was good and good people. The best people I've ever known in my life lived in the mining camp. A lot of people, they sent a missionary to Edgewood, and I told people, they laughed at me. I said, people sent her there to educate us heathens. But I want you to know she got educated when she come there. She sure did. She's the one that got educated. Some of the best people I ever knew in my life in the mining camp.
Well, now,
Miss Marino was fine old lady.
Yeah, there's a lot of them, sir. Good.
Was this particular mining camp, did a certain company come in and open it up? I understand up in Harlan County that was
the situation. That's the way they did. And they had a commissary, they called it. Of course, it was a grocery store. But they had dry goods and it was just a general store. You could get most anything you wanted there. And you didn't have to wait till payday. They had an office and you go grow scrip and spend it for groceries and things till payday, and then you draw your money. And you didn't know it. You'd done paid your things as you went. You had your money saved.
And each mine had their own doctor. And we was lucky enough, she was lucky enough for the doctor at Edgewood to be a friend of our families. It was Dr. Jacob Schutz. And of course, Dr. Cass Osmus helped him doctor later, didn't
he? Yeah, but Dr. Carl was my favorite. His wife was like a sister to me. We got into all kinds of things. When anybody died, we had to go take care of them. We had to make their burial clothes and fix them in the casket. And if somebody was sick and didn't have nothing, we had to get out and gather up something and take it to them. We got in terrible messes and we'd laugh about it, and the doctor would get mad when we laughed. He thought we was making fun. And he was just like a brother now. He wasn't my doctor. I wouldn't have him because I wouldn't have a brother of mine for a doctor. And I wouldn't let Dr. Carr doctor me.
Well, what company was it that had the mining camp where you were at?
Shamrock is the name of it. And Edgewood was the post office. Or Shamrock, which way was it? Shamrock was the mines, and Edgewood is the post office.
Well, now, you mentioned that the company provided a doctor and the commissary. What other provisions did they make for the mining camp people?
Well, you paid an undertaker, you paid $1 a month for your doctor, and you paid $1 a month for the undertaker. And the undertaker come into the camp and embalmed the people when they died and set the casket and put them in them at home. And it happened that I was the gold. I had to help the undertaker. I always helped embalm them and fix them. And Beulah Flowers that I told you about down here, her sister-in-law was the first person that I helped embalm. Carl Newman was the undertaker, and they sent for me to come and help him, and I did. And from then on, he called on me, and I had to help him embalm.
Well, now, you've mentioned funerals. Just tell me how funerals were different then than they are today.
Well, they mostly had them at home then. They embalmed them at home, that is in the mining camp. Of course, here in town, it's a little different. But they'd embalm them and fix them, and they had a cemetery. Mining camps had cemeteries, you know, and they'd bury them there. They just embalm them and bring the casket in, put them in it, and and they'd have a preacher or somebody, you know, that know them to hold a service, just short service at the house.
How long did they keep a body before they buried it?
About 24 hours.
But lots of folks didn't bury at the camp. They took them to their, wherever they was raised, to their own cemeteries.
Back home.
Yes.
And now we'll go back and talk some more about the mining camp. Did the mine company provide a school for the miners' children?
Yes, they had schools in all mining camps. And they had pretty good teachers, and that's something else I had to do. For some reason, the people in the mines thought the school teachers were big folks, and they wouldn't keep them. I had to board them before they all lived with me.
I had to teach the school for them if they were sick or something.
Oh, you were a substitute?
Yeah, I substituted when the teacher was sick and couldn't go sometimes. Not too much, but several days.
And what about houses? Did the mine company provide the houses, or did you have to buy your own?
No, they provided the houses, and the rent was real cheap. I think we had 5 rooms, and they kept them fixed up real nice, and the lights and water and everything, about $8 a month.
And if they wanted to work it, you didn't pay no rent.
Now, when did the mining camp life, I mean, is it over? Do people own their own homes in this area now? Or what's the situation? Or is there no camp there anymore?
No, there's no camp there anymore. There's a few houses where I live. We drove up by there a few Sundays ago. The house that I lived in was torn down. I lived down next to the store. I didn't live up in the camp where the most people lived. A few people was kind of jealous that I was pissed. But I didn't live up in the camp, but there's an awful lot of good people that did. I know them.
Well, now, did you ever live in a mining camp, Mrs. Raines?
No.
You were talking about the good people in the mining camp, Mrs. Johns. I've always kind of thought of miners as kind of rough characters.
Well, honey, they're not. Most people did. That's what I said about that missionary. She thought she was coming there to educate us heathens, but she got educated. There's good people, educated people, and, you know, miners usually made more money than on other jobs, and they liked it. And if you raised a boy in the mining camp, they usually stayed a miner.
Well, now, did you have any violence in your mining camp?
No, we didn't.
Mm-mm. What about disasters?
Well, no, nothing. And there was one of our neighbors was going to have a baby, and the mines were shut down at that time, and our husband was working up in Harlan, coming home on weekends. And I had me an old big pistol there, and if I needed help, I was to shoot that pistol. And Miss Simon got sick one night, and I had to have help, and I went out on the front porch and turned the old pistol loose twice, and it wasn't 5 minutes till that house was surrounded by them neighbors. I mean, they stood by you, and they got a doctor, and they done everything.
When did you leave the mining camp?
Well, we left the mining camp in 1930. We come back here in 1930. The last place we lived was Monty Blue, Virginia, 2 miles above St. Charles, Virginia. We lived up there 2 years and a half.
And then we moved the housekeeping in the mining camp. I took her there. I took her to the mines when I got her.
Now, what did you think of it, Amy, going to the mines?
I knew where I was going. I slipped off and went. We was married at Fork Ridge in the mining camp. I slipped off from home.
Oh,
they thought I was going to work that morning, and I caught the train at 7 o'clock and went to Fork Ridge and got married at 9:30.
Did your parents reject the idea of you going into a marriage?
My dad just rejected getting married. He just thought he ought to keep his children all the time at home.
Oh, I see.
He never knew when one of his children got married. The other one just walked out and got married, and he didn't know nothing about it. He's not married.
Well, now, what about you, Mrs. Raines? Do you have anything like a mining? You didn't live in the mining camp, but what occupation did your husband have?
Well, he worked for our, at that time, biggest meat and grocery store for a time, and then he worked at the laundry. He drove a laundry wagon for quite a while, and then he went into produce business for himself and sold produce. We worked for the LB Price Company a while, and then had to work for Alabama Novelty Company. It was a company that sold all over, you know, go into the homes. And we had that quite a while. And then after that, he sold produce.
Now, do you ladies remember horse and buggy days? I mean, were there horses and buggies here when you came?
That's all there was. For years after we come here, my daddy was a horse trader and a farmer, and we had horses and buggies all the time. We was raised with them.
I've cried over many hours.
I never did like them. I was afraid of them, but we had them.
Our daddy owned every sort of horse stock that was ever in the state of Kentucky. He from the best to the worst. He'd get out trading and come in home, bring one in home, and he'd lay down and never get up no more. He'd bring him in the best. He just had all kinds. And when my oldest boy was born, I was in the bed with this little baby, and my daddy, I lived next door to my daddy, and him and my youngest brother was going up in Harlan to buy and sell and trade horses, and they took one off that was my pet, Dan. And I cried all day over that horse. Nobody ever did know what I was crying
for. I didn't cry over one. I didn't like
and
it.
And they didn't bring me back either. But the last one, I guess, that I cried over, we had one that lived to be 32 years old. He's just been dead. He died just a short time before Clyde did. Doc, you know.
Yeah.
He was a big, they call him Pintos, you know, spotted. He was bay and white spotted, and the bay spots on him was dappled. He was a beauty. Until he got so old, he couldn't eat good, and those dapples faded. He was just sort of red, you know, and white spotted. But I think half Middlesbrough cried when he died.
Everybody knew that horse.
Clyde took him up 4 mile run to keep him from being where we could see him when he got down and couldn't eat and couldn't go. And he took him up there where we couldn't see him, and Lord, I just worry and want to go see that horse so bad. He was 32 years old when he died.
What kind of time could you make in a horse and buggy? I'm sure it was slow traveling around.
We made pretty good time if I was driving.
You're a wild driver.
Oh, we'd get out on Sunday and drive and go up to the Pinnacle. Of course, it's just a little narrow dirt road, but we'd go up to the Pinnacle, and there's a place out here around the mountain where they called it Grassy Springs. I don't know whether I could go to it now or not. And we'd go there and picnic, you know, load up the buggy. My dad didn't take the wagon, and my mother and the small children, and us girls that thought we was getting about grown, we got in the buggy.
Yes. I brought a wagon off of the Mountain when we'd been up there once, and they was some Mr. Seals went with us. You and Rose was driving the buggy, and I was in the wagon with my daddy and Mr. Seals and the other children, and I just reached over and took the lines out of my daddy's hand and got the whip to go and cut them horses.
That's the day the buggy, the horse run away with the buggy, and my daddy sold it then. He wouldn't let us have it. He was afraid we'd get out when he run around and get hurt.
That Mr. Seals had begged me not to hit one of the mules. He knew it would run away if I hit it. And I'd reach out and hit the other one. Oh, I brought that wagon off that. My daddy laughing at me.
Oh, goodness.
And I, you know, things like that never was funny to me. I was. It wasn't. It wasn't.
Well, now, when they run away with you all, who was driving your Rose?
Rose was driving. I never drove no horses. I didn't like them.
Still don't. She didn't like them much either.
Excuse me, ladies, I'm going to turn this tape over. This is side two of an interview with Mrs. W.E. John and Mrs. Harder Rain. Ladies, are there any more horse and buggy experiences you all would like to tell about?
Well, I really can't think of none.
Well, we'll move on then. I'd like to talk about the early industries they had here in Middlesboro when you all came, other than the mining. What else did they have?
The tannery and the iron furnace was the biggest things.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any idea about how many people made their living in these different industries? Mining and
well,
the
now
iron.
We had the iron furnace and the tannery. And the New Southbury and Ice Company.
And Hose Foundry.
And Hose Foundry,
yeah.
That was old.
And my daddy worked at the brewery most of the time. Early time.
Well now, what about the Middlesboro Golf Course? I understand it's the oldest in the world. Is
it
that
is.
Correct?
It's the oldest one in the United States.
It's the oldest one in the world, it's supposed to be, I think it is.
Well now, do you have any idea when it was established?
No, I don't. It was there as long as I can remember.
Oh, it was here even before you all came?
Yes, it was. It was there. I can't remember nothing about it on this.
And the Rains is on that graveyard, that, not graveyard, that land when they bought it and made the golf links there, the golf links.
Well, do you know when it was?
Oh,
they
no,
it? You
know. No, honey, it was way back. There's one of the ranges now thinks that she can go in there and get some money off of that yet. But she can't, you know that, mm-hmm. Susie.
There's too many crooks wanting money for nothing.
Well, do you all have any idea why the first golf course would have been established here? Who in the world made a golf course?
I don't know. I don't have a bit of history about who started it or how they learned to play it or nothing, but they just say it's the oldest one in the world.
It was the people from England.
Yeah, I know that.
It was the oldest one in the United States, they claim, but I don't know about the other part.
Were there a lot of English people here?
Yes, there were several back then, and there was quite a few Dutch Jews. The Dutch owned the brewery. Cumley, what was old man Cumley's name? Joe Cumley and George Guderian and George and what was
Will Walbrick was a big owner in it. He's the only one I remember, him and Mr. Cumley.
Well, there was another one, if I could only think of their names, it's kin to the White. You know, the dentist, why his
I don't know about that.
Oh, what were their names? Can't remember this. I'm not in here yet.
Well, do you all remember when the Cumberland Gap National Park was established?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I remember that very well.
They took our daddy's land.
Well, my daddy sold it to them.
Well, they went in and didn't sell. They condemned it and took it anyway, so he had to sell.
Well, I didn't know whether he had to
or not, but I knew he sold them. All that land up in there belonged to my daddy in the park. And Edwin Fletcher, my son-in-law, owned and lived right straight over there where the building is. And they had to sell it, and they bought this big house up here on the hill. My oldest daughter lives right now.
The building, you mean the building that's there at the entrance?
The building that's there now. They tore his house down, of course, and built that building. But that's where he lived and owned. And
well, now, what year was the park established? Do you remember that?
No, I don't remember, but it's not been too long ago.
Let's see.
Since we built this house.
Oh, 20 years after we built
that
this house.
That was in the late 40s. Late 40s or early 50s, wasn't it?
It had to be. It ain't been too long ago.
Uh-huh. It was in the late 40s, I'm sure. Because, you know, I lived the last house in Middlesbrough, in the city of Middlesbrough, going toward Cumberland Gap. When they took it, I lived up on the bank there, and they wanted me to stay till it was all sold and took care of. And I believe that it was when I left there and moved out on the, I call it the Ball Hill, a farm out where the shirt factory and Permapipe and all them things, that was my corn fields. and when I moved out there, it was in the early 50s, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
About 50 or 51, I believe. And it was just in the process then. You know, they were still buying land and taking it. And
has the park been a big financial boon to the area? I mean, did it bring in a lot of tourists?
Well, I don't know whether it's brought in many tourists or not. It's furnished work for several people around. Her son that she lost a few years ago, he worked in the park. And I've got a friend down here, Harold Brogan, that works up there. And they
well, glad. Girl, Marianne yeah. works there.
She
now.
Works there now. They said they give her the job her daddy had. She's a little bitty girl.
What did he do that she could do too?
Well, he done everything. He mowed grass and he cleaned her trees. She cleaned rocks out of the creek one day and come in wore out. And one day she I forgot what she said. She done that day and she was so tired.
The last work that he did, though, he was working in Hensley Settlement. He had a crew of men that he worked there. He just got to come in on the weekend
yeah.
home. And they was, they're going to have something at Hensley Settlement in a few days. We ought to go. Anyway, they reestablished the schoolhouse and the church. You know, they
way back in the mountains.
Uh-huh. It was a settlement on top of the mountains back in there that where people lived and was born. Lila Davison down here, Giles, her folks, they were Hensleys. They was from that part of
now,
the
is that in Bell County, this Hensley Settlement?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
And
it's inside the park.
Oh,
they had fixed the church and school. It was used for both school and church. It's a log building. And then Mr. Gibbons
father and them had, they had rebuilt their old house and the spring houses. They had little log spring houses where they kept their milk and so on, and there's a big cemetery up there. And Clyde was cleaning up and trying to make that look like it did when they lived there. Most people had left off of there before the park took it, you know, and started rebuilding it and so forth. And
I think they could see and tell how the houses was. They were all log houses, and they've redone them, you know, got them fixed up good.
Back to their original
thing. A lot of them.
Well, just how big is this park? How many acres? Do y'all have any idea?
No, I don't.
I don't
know. A lot of it's in Virginia, and a lot in Tennessee, and a lot in Bell County. It's a big thing.
Well, what attractions does it have other than the gap and the pinnacle now?
Well, now, the Cudjoe's Cave, there's quite a few that goes through that. We passed there a few days ago, and it was a school
park there, and there's going through it. But you know, what enters some people don't others. Now, none of that don't interest me a bit.
Well,
I don't want to go through that cave no more ever. I don't like it. And they've got picnic grounds and tables way back, beautiful places, but I don't like to go picnicking. I've been back there picnicking. The ants and bees and yellow jackets, I just don't like them.
You like to picnic, this is right.
I asked her the other day, I said, what's the matter with me? I ain't like nary one of the family. I don't like things that they do. But everybody is individual, and I'm just different.
But now people goes and to this sense of settlement that they was reconstructing, you know. And there was one thing that I thought the park officials did awfully bad. Mr. and Mrs. Gibbon, and they have a son, a grown man. The old man was born and raised there. And they sort of rebuilt his daddy, I think it was his daddy's home, and let them live there as long as he worked, and the boy worked too. And when he had a heart attack and got disabled to work, he had to move from there, and they give someone else that. And I thought they should let him live there the rest of his life. I stayed all day there, a day or two, time or two, you know, when I went with Clyde and Marge up there.
Did they have any kind of dedication ceremony when the park opened?
Yes, they did. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they did. Over at that building.
Did they have any dignitaries? Any?
I don't remember, but I'm sure they did. Yeah. The governor, the Kentucky governor, was sure, and maybe Tennessee and Virginia ones, but I don't,
of course, think they remember that. Jimmy Carter, the most of the politicians, is friends to us. We don't call them. Big shots.
The biggest shock I had around here when they opened the park, President Nixon was here.
Nixon was down here for the
park. Yes, he was here for the park opening, and my daughter that lives up on Dexter Avenue, she had her camera with her. It was speaking down to Cumberland Hotel, before the Cumberland Hotel was tore down. And she hollered at him, and he looked confused, and she snapped his picture.
Speaking of dignitaries, have there been any distinguished people, any particular distinguished people that have come from Middlesbrough?
Not that I remember off right now. Of course, them people from England here the other day, they toured the park and different places around Europe. But I just don't remember others.
I mean, outstanding citizens that have been born here, raised here. That's,
well,
you don't remember any?
No, I really don't.
or that you need
around Pineville and here. We've had lots that went into Congress and Senate and things like that. And Denver Knuckles, he lives.
The English people have done all their work across the mountain, Harrogate.
They built Middlesbrough. The Middlesbrough Hotel, the first just had one hotel, and they built it. It was hundreds of rooms, and I guess 25 gables is the oldest looking thing I ever saw for a hotel. It was wood, and brick or nothing. But it burnt down in the 30s. Because we lived out on Leffens Street when it burnt down. And Ruth, my oldest daughter, she said she never would go to bed hardly. She stayed up late all the time. And somebody asked her about it. She said, "I'm afraid that hotel burned up and I won't see it."
My goodness. Well, now, you mentioned Pineville. Now, which town is the county seat? Pineville or
Pineville? Yeah, Pineville. Pineville County.
Well, what kind of relationship is there between Pineville and Middlesbrough? Are they competitive cities?
No.
Just kind of one big town.
Unlike Dr. Schultz said he wanted to live to see it incorporated. The two towns come together, you know, and just be one city. So.
Well, how did Pineville come to be the county seat? I thought Middlesbrough was the larger town.
It is. It's three times the larger, according to population and size. But I don't know if Pineville's always been the county seat. Maybe it was the biggest when it was. I don't have room to expand much, you see. It's right there between them mountains. They can't expand much.
You know what? It means... Are someone is here in the office?
No, now I'm not familiar with Middlesbrough.
Well, if you used to go there, you could see the picture of Harrogate before Middlesbrough was ever anything.
Well, it's just a short time. That was the biggest waste that ever happened in this part of the country. They built a hotel there.
Lord, I Three Seasons Hotel. The picture of it's down at the KU Auditorium.
And they had it, they had the best of silverware and china and everything there. And they demolished it it wasn't paying out or nothing, you know. It didn't do what they thought it was going to be.
Now, is this the middle
They thought world? This whole place was going to be just working live with newcomers and so forth. And that's the biggest waste that's ever happened around here.
Well, now,
them tearing that building down, it was over there on the LMU ground, Harrogate College. That was where it was built.
What? How would you all compare this area today as compared when you were, you know, younger, growing up
here? Well, it's as much difference as there is day and night. It was just like being out in the country almost then. Of course, they had a few works here, but that was about all.
And what kind of jobs do people in Middlesbrough get today? Are there still mining work?
Yeah, a lot of people works at the mines now, and then they've got their... Big lot of people works at the tannery. Yes, they employ a lot.
Well, back then, the men worked at the tannery and the iron furnace and the brewery and the whole foundry,
and that covered the town about it, because there weren't many people lived here. The population wasn't very big.
And there were several distilleries here that made whiskey.
Yeah, they were.
And there was one place they called the Keg House. Of course, us children never went around that. And then above the, on the park between here and Fern Lake, up through there, they was still houses.
the park now, they've been having a school over there, and they can't have it no more on account of the dam at the lake. They're afraid of this dam, and they're not going to have that school anymore until they get the dam worked on. But up through there was still houses. See, this one that was, what was that? Park Grave Mountain?
I don't know a thing about where it's built. It was every year but one. He was up there close where we lived in us young'uns. I've been there and they'd take a dip and dip in the whiskey and offer us
something. Well, yes, that was going toward Cumming Gap. Yeah, that was the last.
That's the only one that ever here.
That was McFarland's.
I didn't know about the other.
Well, it was McFarland's.
Well, you know, when we come to Middleburg.
Park Grave Mountain Park.
When we come to Middleburg, there was 33 open saloons.
Yeah.
Four wholesale houses, three distilleries, and a brewery.
Yeah, yeah.
And they had four policemen, two of a night and two of a day, and they walked.
Yeah.
Was Middlesboro a violent town?
No, I never heard of no violence.
There was about two or
not nothing much. I did. There was a few things.
There's a few fugitives.
Yeah,
horses and balls.
Well, yeah, but that had happened. A big lot of that happened before we ever moved here.
Yeah.
And then there's some boys took one out of the manor in theater and took him around behind it and killed him with a Coca-Cola bottle, beat his head up with a Coca-Cola bottle. That's as bad a violence, and they took one on the pinnacle and drove hat pins in his head and killed him, tied him down. Souser was his name, a Souser boy. Them two is the worst and the only that I ever heard of real, real bad.
I just wondered, he mentioned 33 saloons, and I just wondered, you know, if they had a lot of drinking and trouble.
They was quite a bit of feuding back then.
Well, what did they feud over?
Well, practically nothing.
Just like the Hatfields and McCoys.
Yeah.
They had a racket and got in, the Colsons and the Balls. Now, we lived back here when George Colson was killed.
Oh, yeah.
And they killed Riley Ball in the courthouse at a trial.
My daddy gave...
They was some Balls, but they wasn't as much as
that them. Morning. He rode down with my daddy that morning, and when he went to get out there at where the telephone office, between the telephone office and the KU office, he rode that far with Pappy in the wagon, and he was going to get off there, and he told Pappy he wanted money, and Pappy gave him a $10 or $20 bill, I forgot which. And told him, said, George, you just go get drunk and get killed. And before my daddy got back into town, he was killed.
Well, now, what about the Great Depression here in Middlesboro? It, you know, had a lot of mining camps and things. Now,
we lived right out on 11th Street. Well, people practically starved to death. One baby did, and I've cried. I've shed more tears over that than any one thing that's ever happened. We lived in hollering distance of the people that had twin babies, and one of them died, and the doctor said he'd starved to death, had never had a drop of grease in his stomach and his wife. Well, I happened to be working at the Bluebell Overall Factory. You didn't make much money, but you made enough to have plenty to eat. And Bill worked at the Snyder's Packing House. We were both working, and we could have fed that baby, and I've cried over that baby a dime more than once. It hurts me yet to think about that little thing starving to death.
Were they just too proud to call on you?
I don't know. There wasn't no relief then. You didn't get no relief nor no welfare checks and things like you do now. If you didn't have it, you just didn't have it unless some of your neighbors helped you. That's it.
And you just didn't realize
I didn't know it. I didn't know the people, and not knowing them wouldn't have made no difference. If I'd known that baby is hungry, I'd have bought them something to eat. But you see, I didn't know it till it was dead.
Well, What other recollections do you have of depression, either of you?
Oh, I can't think of anything that would be worse.
Well, that's about the only thing that I remember, because I was working every day. We had plenty to eat and wear, but there's thousands that didn't, hundreds that didn't.
Our folks live like country people. They lived here always, but when my daddy worked on public works, he had men hired to farm. They never was a time that they didn't have from one to four of other people's boys working or hipping or something. But they raised hogs, they had cows, and had their own meat and their own milk, and had corn and stuff like that, you know.
Well, what about Franklin Roosevelt? I mean, I think depression, I just think of Roosevelt.
I don't know, I liked him and I thought he was the best man, and he did make jobs and he got things kind of straightened out, and we got a raise at the factory several cents on the hour, and naturally the next time he run I voted for him again.
I can tell you one instance of myself. I was working for $1.20 a day, 10 hours. And he says, you were in war. You worked that man 8 hours and pay him $3.20 a day. If he works overtime, it's time and a half. That's what Franklin Roosevelt done for Middleburg.
Well, now, what about the wars, the First World War, Second World War? What kind of effect did it have on Middlesboro?
Well, during the war, things boomed. Everybody worked and had more money than they did other times. We lived in the mining camp in World War I, and we lived during World War II. And, of course, my son was in the Korean War, and so I've known about all of them.
Our brothers and cousins and everything was in World War I.
But it just made boom time.
Yeah, it did. People had jobs. What wasn't in the war fighting had jobs working, making pretty good living.
Well, another thing, people don't pay much attention to it, but the man that worked at the mines, there wasn't very many of them had to go to war.
Well, no, they needed that to work, of course. They got exempted.
Well, but I didn't have to go.
No, because you was working in the mines.
Now, ladies, there's one thing I want to close with here, just housekeeping. Now, tell me, how was it different, like when you first married and set up housekeeping, than a young couple starting out today?
Well, it was all the difference in the world. A young couple starting out today, for instance, my grandson, him and his wife sat down with a pencil and paper and said, now we're going to be just as saving as we can. We're not going to buy a thing that we don't have to have. And we got to looking over the list, and they had the electric range and an automatic washer and dryer and a bedroom suit and a couch and a chair and I don't know what all, just things like people buys nowadays. And when I went to housekeeping, I bought a man left Fork Ridge, and I took a $10 bill and bought everything that I went to housekeeping with. We rented the house, and I got 2 iron beds and a coal cook stove and a coal heater and a little old dresser and a few cane bottom chairs. Now that's what I went to housekeeping with, and I was tickled to death and just as happy as I could be.
How'd you wash your clothes?
I washed them on the washboard, scrubbed them on the board. And we married the third day of May, and we didn't have a quilt, and my parents and his parents were they had a big family, and I know they didn't have quilts and things to spare. And the house had strips nailed on the cracks outside in the mining camp, and I went and pulled me four of them off and got me a red hot poker and burnt holes in them and made my quilts and hung them quilting frames that I tore off the house and quilted my quilts and drove them back on the house. I always made shift. I made a way.
Well, now, what about the coming of electricity? Do y'all remember that?
Yes, I remember it well. They put electric in it, they put it in our house, and we was tickled to death with it, and I went and bought me an iron.
Well, now, what year did you get electricity?
Well, we got it before Christmas, before we left there, didn't we?
Yes.
They put electricity in the house, and we was married in 1913, and we left in 1915, so we got it about 14, I guess.
Well, now, Mrs. Rains, what can you remember of your early housekeeping experiences?
Oh, nothing worth telling, I don't guess. I had a terrible little. I had a bed and dresser and the cook stove and table and
my table that I bought
and a chair.
It had the mark on the leg. I cut the bushes. It's a homemade table. I was tickled it and the mark is still on the legs.
I made it in the shop of Tamar's.
I don't know who made it. We bought it from them people.
Me and Evan Anderson built a one that we used for cook table.
Well, what did you do about refrigeration?
But I never did wash. I ironed.
You never did wash? Well, who washed her clothes? Or did they go to the laundry?
First one in the night, the laundry, and then just different people. I don't know.
And ever since she bought and moved right there, probably up here, I do it when I go to run my clothes. We go up the back door and get hers and put them in the washer.
I used to iron, but I never have washed. And I'm just nearly 81 years old.
Well, how odd. I didn't know anybody escaped using a washing machine.
Oh, man, I'll tell you, till we moved in this house here, I used the washboard. And the first washer I had was an old wringer type. And it's just been 15 years that I've had that automatic washer and dryer.
And what did you think when you got your automatic washer and dryer? Did you think this is a godsend or something?
Well, no. I didn't. I didn't think too much about it because I knowed all about them and knowed people that had them, and I'd used the wringer washer and I didn't mind it a bit. I don't know why, but I've always enjoyed working. Nancy Birch said I was the only woman she ever knowed in her life that got up early in the morning and never stopped doing something till started to go to bed at night. If I'm not making tatting or crocheting or a sewing, I'm out a digging and a grubbing and making a garden.
Okay, ladies, thank you very much.